checked out. Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market creates win-win partnerships with our suppliers, and we love to tell their stories. Hot Bread Kitchen is a nonprofit, multi-ethnic bakery and job training program out of Manhattan, whose range of international breads are as impressive as they are authentic. Learn more at hotbreadkitchen.org or visit one of our six Manhattan locations for a taste.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah. That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Today's show has been about a year in the making, I believe, somewhere right around there. Very pleased to have in the studio today author Brad Thomas Parsons of the new book, actually just came out yesterday, Bitters, A Spirited History of a Classic Cure-All. I am, like I said, it's been a year in the making. Congratulations on finally this book. I mean, actually came out pretty quick, considering, you know, like most people spend a very long time on you know, their novels and stuff. But, you know, Bitters, like, you got it all right here in this book. So it's really cool. And I'm very happy to have a copy. And I can't wait to, like, spill a bunch of drinks on it. And
that's what it's meant for.
But thanks for coming on the show, Brad.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's really great to be here.
Really great to have you. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously, this show, we're going to talk a lot about Bitters, but how did you, let's go back to the beginning. How did you get into it? How did you get into the cocktails and the bitters and the whole shebang?
Sure. Well, you know, I didn't come at the book from a bartender's perspective, other than having 4 years during summer behind the stick at a beach bar called Harpoon Eddie's in upstate New York. But, you know, I'm an enthusiast in the food world and cocktail world. Meaning I go out to eat and drink a lot and experiment at home a lot.
I'm an enthusiast, too.
Exactly. And for years, I was the cookbook editor at Amazon.com in Seattle. And so I was very into the food category, interviewed tons of people on it. And I had started seeing, as many others did, you know, these vials and bottles of potions at bars, both homemade and commercial, of bitters beyond Angostura, the bottle. And it fascinated me, and I'm naturally curious, and I asked a lot of bartenders. I'd say, you know, what is this? How are you using it? And I ended up writing an article for a Seattle Metropolitan magazine, and it was a short 450-word piece that I over-researched to death. I interviewed dozens of people, bought so many bitters, started making my own, and I just couldn't shake it. And I have a sort of completist spirit when I approach a project, and that's what happened. And then I talked to a friend who's a cocktail writer, and he was like, oh, you should do a book on bitters. And then when I was thinking about it, getting ready to write a proposal, and I was thumbing through Imbibe, David Wondrich's great book, mm-hmm. and he has a section on bitters that's kind of small, and he has a note that says something like, if bitters were to get its due, it would deserve another volume like this book. And I was like, I felt like, okay, I've got permission. And I put a proposal together, and a year and a half later, here we are.
That's great. So, I mean, like, pretty much the stars line, it just made sense to you.
Yeah, I saw, you know, coming from a cookbook editor's perspective, I saw that there was no book on it in years, there was no contemporary book on the subject, just out-of-print cocktail books referenced recipes. People were getting recipes online, and there was no book on the horizon, or no one had prepared or planned to do a book. So I saw it as an opportunity that I embraced, and once we put the flag down, you know, we're going to do it. Then it happened, and you know, and for me, bitters, as I think you'll agree, isn't a fad in the cocktail industry. It's very popular. It's really hot right now, but it's an essential element of a drink, of the original definition of the cocktail, and so it's not a fad like an infusion or something like that. It's something that needs to be behind the bar and something you can do to step up your home game, and that's what really got me about it, and the history of it, and just the more and more bitters coming on market. So I really, it's a great topic to geek out on, and
absolutely,
I did so.
And you and I have quite a few times at the bar.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, so. Going back to a lot of these, questions that you were getting, a lot of these inquiries about like bitters, and well, that you were also giving, you know, to bartenders,
yes.
and to other writers. I mean, Can you give us, like, obviously it's in the book and you should buy the book. It's out on 10 Speed Press. But just give us, like, kind of a brief history of, like why bitters are there in cocktails and why they're important. You know?
Sure. Well, like, as we touched upon, you know, in the golden age of cocktails, there was various categories for drinks like fizzes and daisies and flips, and a cocktail was one of those. And the original definition from 1806 was a liquor of sugar, water, spirits, and bitters. So there is bitters in the original definition of cocktail, and for years that was the case. And from the 1800s up through Prohibition, many people were making their own bitters behind the bar. There were many commercial bitters selling millions of bottles a year. It was a really profitable industry that inspired knockoffs and copycats, and it was unregulated by all means. And then bitters disappeared, which we could talk about for a couple of reasons. And for decades, there was only a couple of commercial bitters on the market. And then with the blowing up of cocktail geeks getting into craft cocktails, the internet giving people freedom to source out-of-print bar books and to reference these recipes. Like, this calls for orange bitters. What is orange bitters? They go to buy it. They can't find it anywhere. Yeah. So that gets that DIY spirit to, well, maybe I better make my own. And so there was just this synchronicity that happened where from 2004 to today, we've blown up from having one to two commercial orange bitters not so readily available, but out there, a dozen plus different flavors from craft, artisanal, and commercial makers out there. So, and what it does for a drink, for me, and that was a big lure of the book too, was, you know, the bitters we're talking about are the cocktail bitters, aromatic bitters, not the potable bitters like Campari or your favorite, right, Fernet. And and they are to be applied in just a few dashes or a few drops. But so much magic happens when you do that to a drink. And, you know, my go-to story is like Taste of Manhattan, side by side, rye, sweet vermouth, with absolutely bitters and without bitters. And you will know something is missing in that other one. It's going to be a cloyingly sweet drink. It won't be well balanced. And so bitters can, often if something is wrong with a drink, bitters can save it. It can tampen down a sweetness or play around with a sour, bring disparate ingredients together. But you never, like with your pear bitter, like in your old fashioned at Prime Eats, you don't sip that and go, ooh, I'm getting pear. But the notes of that, the depth of what's going on in there with that works so well with the rye, as opposed to if you put an orange bitters in there or something like that. And that's what I love. So putting it on your tongue versus smelling it versus putting it in soda water versus putting it in a cocktail, so much different things happen. And it's often compared to being the salt of the bartender's spice cabinet. But it's more than that. You know, it's a whole liquid spice cabinet. You can take your drinks in many different directions. So not every drink needs bitters, but I think so many can benefit from it. So it's an essential.
I disagree with you.
Oh,
every drink. Every drink does.
Well, you could probably convince me by the end of this program.
I mean, going back to what you were saying about like the taste and the smell and mm-hmm. the way it makes. I mean, I was at a cognac tasting earlier today, so I apologize if I'm slurring. But you know, so many times the aromatics, and you know, obviously with like things like Angostura and Fees, you know, you've got their aromatic bitters, and the taste can be, the taste and the smell don't necessarily always match up, but they don't have to, and mm-hmm. that's really interesting because like the first sense you have with a cocktail is you get the smell of it.
Yeah, stick,
and then
stick
you
your nose
it
in there.
It
yeah.
could be different. Yeah, it's really just amazing what it does to a cocktail.
And I find too, like if you put a drop of a homemade bitters or commercial bitters on your tongue, you will get a taste of it, but that's not going to be what it tastes like once it introduces. Once, yeah. So that's why I think as many people, you know, agree. Like when I was researching the book, you know, it's in San Francisco and Seattle and New York and Austin, different places. And I would say, hey, do you make your own bitters? And often it was something they'd pull out from under the bar behind a shelf. It wasn't yet on the menu. Someone's tinkering with it. And I would say, oh, can I try it? And it was very interesting to see how people presented it to you. Someone would just like hand you the bottle. Someone would grab your hand and put some on the back like hot sauce. Someone would give you a glass of soda water with it. But, you know, I find, you know, having a little taste on your tongue, but you're mostly going to get the alcohol, the heat from it when you first do that. But then the biggest thing, put it between your hands, cup them, rub them together, bring them to your nose and give a big whiff. And then you sort of, okay, I'm getting clove, I'm getting allspice. What can that play well with in a drink? And I think now, you know, with so many bitters out there, great problem to have. But I think a lot of people you're seeing some bitters out there where you're wondering, was that bitters made just because it's a novelty, or is it something a drink warrants? So as opposed to like coming up with the cocktail first, like if I have a really floral drink, lavender bitters might make sense in that. But, you know, there's some strange ones out there that are just getting, we've used up all the citrus, we've used up all of this, let's go vegetal, or let's do this or that. And it doesn't always work. But I think, yeah, so I think the important thing is like the bitters works as an aromatic, whether, you know, when it's in the drink, but also, as you know, applied on top of a drink, like a pisco sour, or whether it's spritzed or dropped in there. And sometimes like a little, one bitters is used when stirring, and then a different one is used as a garnish of sorts, an aromatic garnish.
And sometimes you just pop the dasher top off and put it in a shot glass, like Nick Jarrett and I always do.
Yes. That was a Boston thing that kind of made it wide, but yeah.
So with all these different, we've got, like you were just saying, all these different very specified bitters. I remember, you know, like I guess 5 or 6 years ago, I mean, time's flying by, so I can't really put a, I mean, I'm sure I dated it, but I have in my refrigerator at home, I have a bottle of my first experimental bitters. They were mango curry bitters.
Nice.
And the whole reason why I made a mango curry bitters is because I wanted to do a Manhattan variation. I had just seen the Darjeeling Limited, and I wanted to make a cocktail called the Voltaire No. 6.
Very cool.
I made a mango curry bitters, but it was like very specified for that one cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I ever use it in another cocktail. What are some of the ones that you've seen that are out there that are just like so like specific?
Well, I think I'm not, you know, you probably Louis Smeeby was making, his bitters are tough to find now. He's a Brooklyn bitters maker, and he went big with introducing many different really specific esoteric flavors. And a lot of these smaller bitters makers have the problem with, they get some press, they get successful, and they can't keep up production, they can't sell them. And he had some of the most inventive flavors. And I've tried them all at various bars, but actually purchasing them can be a challenge. But he had like one on there that I've used as an example, and it's was his black and white cookie bitters, where it's sort of like, what is that? Why do we need that? But it's like, if you think about
it's so New York.
Exactly. It's very New York, but he's playing with, you know, chocolate notes, vanilla notes. So when you break it down and it sort of deconstruct it, okay, I get it. But in terms of how often would I be reaching for such a bitters, maybe not likely. And now I think too, you know, I respect them for doing it, but the guys from Brooklyn Hemispherical Bitters have a sriracha bitters, and it's hot. You know, it's like you get a lot of spice from it, and that can be challenging with the bitters, where it's just like, why not put a dash of Tabasco in or something like that? So I love that they're doing it. They're making their own version of sriracha, putting it in there. So those are two of the stranger ones. And then ones that are really great, like I said, like Scrappy's in Seattle does a cardamom, and that works with a lot of
I really like their bitters.
Yeah, that works.
I think they're really well done, you know, like nice aromatics, but also the flavor is
They're awesome. Very flavor forward. They're almost a tincture that there's not a lot of complex bittering agents.
A little bit of quinine in there.
Exactly. A little bit in there. But so those would be the two sort of strangest ones. And then just seeing many variations of bad homemade orange bitters, you know, present to me. But but commercially, I think, you know, the ones people are doing are making sense. There's one Miracle Mile Bitters out of Los Angeles. This guy who was a former Miramax movie exec turned bitters maker. And he has a yuzu bitters, which is really nice. And he's been using that, like embracing bitters in food. With he did a raw bar of oysters with that sort of a mignonette, putting yuzu bitters on it.
That's
and
great.
That was genius, I thought. You know, so and he's got a sour cherry. I like the cherry bitters can be tough to do. But he also has a really nice sour cherry bitters. But so, you know, I think it's just a limit. Like people reach their limit of citrus, they run out of grapefruit, oranges, lemons, limes, and then they get a little. They might challenge themselves. But I think. And also just one last one. I forgot the exact name of it, but Bitters Old Men, Zach Feldman, did around Passover a brisket bitters, which actually is fat washed spirit in there, which is, that would definitely be a novelty one, you know, that you're going to find it's fun, but it's challenging to what to actually do with that.
Well, don't you think also that like that the citrus bitters, like your orange bitters, your grapefruit bitters, those are really, you know, and what's cool about this book is that you've included so many recipes of different bitters, and for the home bar, you know, it's really accessible. You can make your own bitters at home. You've got plenty of examples here. But don't you think that like before this book came out, even like the home bartender was, or anyone really that was making bitters on their own, they would start with like an orange bitters, because that's essentially it's one of the easier ones to do. It's the easier ones to pull off, because you have like kind of a template.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost fail-proof, but people, you know, everyone throws their twists in there.
Exactly.
But they throw their twists in there, get it?
Well done.
Thanks.
Well, I think you know, as Gary Regan, famed cocktail writer, he and creator of Regan's Orange Bitters number 6, put the recipe before that, Gary Regan's Bitters Orange number 5, in one of his books, and that kicked off a lot of people experimenting. So it was sort of when people put their code out there to like play, you know, make an app with this code sort of thing. And that was a thing. So that was how you started. And then you did different things. And like you said, like I love, like when it hits December, January, you have blood oranges, you have Satsumas, you have different things. Mm-hmm. So mix them up, blend things. And like when I make orange bitters, like my, I guess, signature would be like mixing some fresh peel with some dried, you know, I like kind of that complexity. Sure. In that. And that's why, you know, even in New York, a really popular thing is the orange bitters using a fitty fitty, where it's half Gary Regan's and half Fee Brothers. So you get a good balance of the fresh orange and the aromatic kind of Christmas spice orange.
Absolutely. And that's fun even in itself, blending bitters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know Death & Company, their house Peychaud's is a mix of Peychaud's and Bitter Truth Creole bitters, you know. And at Fatty Q, they do like an autumn bitters that's Fee's Cranberry with Angostura.
Speaking of Regan's and Peychaud's, when we get back from this break that we're going to take right now, let's talk about a little bit more about the commercial producers coming out of the drought, as it were.
Okay.
All right. When we get back, we'll be talking more about bitters with Brad Parsons. All right. After the break. Bye. Change when it's central, so essential. It has a nice ring when you laugh at the low life. Opinions, and they're coming to the chorus now. I keep my address to yourself, 'cause we need secrets. We need secrets, back right now. Because I never want to make you feel that you're so sure. Never ignorant, so believe in what you want to do. And do you think when they rise up in the falling rain, and if you stay around with your knuckles ground down, the trial's over, the weapon's found. Keep my address to myself, because it's secret, 'cause it's secret, crack, crack. And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we've been talking bitters with Brad Thomas Parsons. The new book on 10 Speed Press. It's available now. It just came out yesterday.
Yeah, it dropped yesterday.
I'm lucky enough to have had a copy mailed to me from you about a week ago. So
yeah, there were some select advanced copies floating around. And I did a couple of... I did one pre-pub event down in Oxford, Mississippi last weekend for the Southern Foodway Symposium. So I signed my very first copy there that day to a bar manager out of a great place in Atlanta who bought two copies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it was fun to sign my first book.
But. So, okay, in preparation for the release, obviously you were down there. What else have you been doing? I mean, I know you were recently featured in Food and Wine.
Yeah, that happened in the October issue, which just dropped off stands. I worked with an editor there who does a column called The Gastronaut, where he takes on an ambitious home project. And he wanted to do something on bitters and got in touch with me. And we thought it'd be fun to do bitters that weren't in the book. So I came up with three bitters, cranberry anise bitters, woodland bitters, and a figgy orange bitters. And then I introduced a cocktail and then how to employ them in a food dish. So that was sort of our great first media hit. But yeah, it's just funny to have a book. It's publishing is very slow. Like to bring a book from, I turned it in last January, and then it's been in edits and production. And then here it is. I went to bed the other night. It's like, okay, it's out tomorrow. But so there's a lot now. The pre-publication is the publicity, which we've been getting some really great publicity, is happening now, and some good things are in store coming up. And I'll be going around doing some events in New York and on the West Coast. And but before the book came out, I did one event in New York. Kara Newman does a great series down at Lolita Bar called Drink.Think, where she has drink writers in to read from works in progress or new works. And I was one of 10 different people there. And so it's fun actually reading it in a noisy bar. And then I'm a member of the Southern Foodways Alliance. I'm not Southern, but a would-be Southerner. And I've been going about 4 years now. And so this year, my book was so close to publication, I made sure that they have a Friday night cocktail party where anyone there with a book, they have a all out on the table. And I was thrilled to be next to Mr. David Wondrich, my fellow Brooklynite, and who made a killer artillery punch that weekend. But so I got to sign some books there, and then we had a great launch party last night. And but the first official event will kick in next week and keep me busy through December.
Nice, very nice. Well, you just mentioned your woodland bitters, and I know you brought some with you, right?
No, I brought the figgy orange.
Oh, the figgy orange.
Yeah,
sweet.
So the woodland was kind of a take on like a forest floor flavor, some nuts and a very woody flavor, like a harvest bitters. And then the figgy orange one was sort of, again, take that orange bitters template and what can I play with?
Manipulate it a little bit.
Yeah, so figs are sweet, but plays with the bitterness well. But also just it felt like I was trying to come up with some autumnal bitters, and that was the idea there. So you get a little sweetness of that. So it tastes like an orange bitters, but you also get the sweetness of the fig in there.
Cool. What have you been using the figgy orange bitters with? I mean, you've got some cocktails that you've been using it for, right?
Yes. In the book, I believe it was, you may have to remind me what that was. I think there was one, the woodland bitters was sort of a Manhattan variation. Oh, I think that was the one I used with Snap, the liqueur.
Oh, Snap, the ginger.
Snap. Yeah. So it was like an old fashioned take with that. But I love it, and I think in a Manhattan or an old fashioned, without a doubt. And when I was at Southern Foodways, it was really sweet. The first guy I signed a book for pulled out of his coat pocket a little glass vial of the figgy orange he had made himself and like wanted me to taste it. And
that's really cool.
And it was great though, because it was like, again, like putting that coat out there. He's like, I thought the figs were sweet enough that I kind of cut down on adding the sweetener at the end. And it was cool to see.
And that's
that.
Cool. And that's exactly what this book, like that section of the book with the recipes, is intended for.
That's what exactly. I want people to sort of say, that's happened to me with the husk cherry bitters, which are on the market now. A strange little tomatillo-like, pineapple-y, honey, tomato-y fruit that I hadn't really experienced living on the West Coast in Seattle. And then I was here at the Green Market, and I'm like, what are these? So I took them home, and the first thing I did was made a syrup out of them and played around with it with tequila. And then I said, let's try it as a bitters. And it was just interesting. So I think, go to your Chinatowns, go to your farmer's market, and just if you see something like a prickly pear or a Concord grape, see what you can do with it. Or,
absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
That's how I want to approach it. Not like a hardcore locavore, but just a seasonality to it. So, and I had a year to write the book, and it was great that I had all four seasons. So I could do my autumnal produce, citrus in winter, rhubarb in spring, and in summer, like some of those other fruit produce that's out there.
Absolutely.
And it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is really cool. I mean, like you just said, not to be like a locavore, do you think? but no, like it's really interesting to go to say like to Austin, Texas, and see what they're doing down there.
Exactly.
Lots of chili peppers and lots of cocktails, which is for us Northerners, of course I'm from down there, but when you aren't used to eating that much spicy food, you go down there and you have some cocktail made with like red pepper cola, and it's like, what? Uh-huh. That's amazing. I have to try that. But it's like, yeah, of course you want to do locally like sourced ingredients.
Well, to take it to the extreme, there's a chef you may be familiar with, Sean Brock out of Charleston, who his restaurant Husk was just voted by Bon Appétit the best restaurant in America. And he serves no ingredients north of the Mason-Dixon line. And I was talking to him down at Southern Foodways, and he's nuts about bitters. And what he does is use like Tennessee cocoa nibs, then he sends them to Alan Benton's Smokehouse makes a smoked cocoa bitters using that kind of thing. That's awesome. Then John Currents, another chef who has a great bar called Snack Bar, he had a bacon bitters when in the South, you know, there's a bacon bitters, and it sounds, oh, cutesy novelty, but he put it in a old school, muddled old fashion, and that sweet and smokiness really played well together. And you know, I pounded like three of those in a, yeah, in the half hour. It's so delicious. But, you know, so I think that's the thing. Yeah. Like see what they're making locally.
Sure. Sure. So speaking of locally, I want to touch back on this book. Where are you going to be? I mean, obviously, you've got a lot coming up. Where are you going to be promoting this book around here so our Brooklyn and New York City residents can go check you out?
We've got some great Brooklyn stuff lined up. The first public event is next Thursday at Greenlight Bookstore, my local. I live in Clinton Hill, so it's my one a few blocks over in Fort Greene. And we're doing a fun little kind of progressive event where Zach Feldman, the proprietor of Bitters Old Men, will be at what they call the Annex, which is their coffee house selling blue bottle coffee next door. He'll be doing bitters and soda from, I think, 5:30 to 6:30. And then at 7:30 we move over to the bookstore where he and I will have a conversation. I'll talk about bitters, pass out samples of bitters for people to try and taste. And then we're going to move over to Green Grape Spirits across the street and have some champagne cocktails and sample some other classic bitters drink.
So you're going on a bitters crawl.
Exactly. It's a bitters crawl. And then the next, then the next morning I'm off to the West Coast for a little bit, Portland and Seattle and San Francisco. But then in December, I have an event at Whisk in Williamsburg, which is a great.
Oh, I love that place.
Yeah. So I'm going to team up with barman Souther Teague and he's going to make some great drinks.
I love that guy too.
Yeah. And the guys from Brooklyn Hemispherical Bitters will be in the house and talking bitters. And then I'm going to do a how to make your own bitters class at the Brooklyn Kitchen in December, and I think it's December 14th, where I'll walk people through three different bitters recipes, and I think it's limited to 15 folks, and we'll split up into groups of five, and then there'll definitely be some more, but those are the three confirmed Brooklyn events going on. So we love to see people there.
Excellent. I'm very excited for this book coming out. I got to tell
thanks.
You.
Thanks. No,
and not just because you put one of my recipes there.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it under a bunch of Christmas trees this season.
It's the perfect gift for the ... You know,
yeah, like, exactly.
The cocktail.
Well, no, and that's the cool thing about it is that it is not necessarily geared just towards the cocktail nerd.
Yes.
I mean, it's for everyone. It's for bartenders. It's for
DIY,
civilians, you know, whatever you want to call it. But it's just a really cool reference, and it's about damn time somebody put a book out like this, and it came out just better than I'm sure that any of us could have ever expected a book like this to come out. Like, yeah, and I'm glad I got one of the first copies. And you're going to have to sign it right now.
You got it.
But before we do that, we're going to go ahead and have one of my favorite bitters, but we're going to do it my style. We're going to do it a bottle of Unterberg, but you got to put a straw in it.
There it is.
All right. Okay. Brad Thomas Parsons, thank you for coming on the show today. It's been my pleasure, and tune in next week where we'll have Marcia Barrow, and I'm sure we'll be referencing this book for quite some time.
Nice.
Thanks, Brad. Cheers.
Cheers. Old man, he's high, Ba-ba. Yes, higher than a kite. Ba-ba-doo-dee. That cat is high. Ba-ba-doo-dee. Look at that look in his eye. Man, I wouldn't lie.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Food Karma. To kick off the New York City Meat Week in style, Meat with a Twist will bring together the best chefs and mixologists for a cocktail food pairing party on November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Meat with a Twist features 10 cocktails paired with 10 chef selections highlighting local, sustainably grown meat such as duck, lamb, chicken, pork, beef, bison, and ostrich. The party will launch a week's worth of events throughout the city that celebrate the slow food movement bringing sustainable meats to our tables. Again, that's November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Updates, tickets, and more information are available at meatweeknyc.com.